This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Next month's primary election will be the first time since 2012 that Wisconsin's voter ID law will be enforced at the polls. Originally signed into law in May of 2011, the law only applied to a 2012 primary election before being placed on hold for a lengthy and ultimately unsuccessful appeals process. Last March, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear an appeal against the law, finally settling the matter for Wisconsin voters. Joining us today to talk about what this law means for voters and officials at the polls are Jenny Dankmeyer, La Crosse County Clerk, Marilyn Pedretti, Town Clerk for the Town of Holland, and Ellen France, Acting President of the League of Women Voters in La Crosse. Thank you all so much for being here today.
Thank you.
So obviously it's been a few years since the voter ID law was passed. Can we start out by going over what the law requires of Wisconsin voters?
Well, the law requires a voter who is voting absentee or at the polls to provide a photo ID. And there's lots of options that are available for the photo ID, but for the most part, a Wisconsin driver's license or a Wisconsin-issued state ID card are two of the most common pieces of identification that people are going to be showing to the polls for their ballots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wanted to go over that because I think that's a misconception that there isn't a voter ID that people need to get. That a lot of times people already have the proper identification. Can you go over a few more other options that people could use?
Yeah, and that's actually correct. We get a lot of phone calls, people asking about the voter ID card that they need. And it's like, there is not such a thing as a voter ID card. It's identification that you already have. But, some other options would be a military ID card. If you have a U.S. passport book or a card, those are acceptable. One of the things is photo identifications that are issued by the Wisconsin University or colleges. You know, there's some provisions about, you know, you have to have a date the card was issued on the student IDs, there has to be a signature, and the expiration date of no more than 2 years. And then the student also must show a fee receipt to show that they have proof of enrollment. And I know we've been working with the University of La Crosse, the WTC, and Viterbo to make sure that their student IDs are going to be acceptable for this photo ID provision.
And there are, you know, obviously a few exceptions for certain people who don't need to show a photo ID at the polls. I don't know if Marilyn, you want to jump in about, you know, who maybe qualifies for certain exceptions.
The only exception I'm aware of is voting by absentee, and you're indefinitely confined absentee voter, and so they won't have to. But any other absentee voter will have to show a voter ID.
Okay, and how does that work?
They're doing it by mail. They'll have to send a copy of their identification, either their Wisconsin driver's license or their ID or whatever form they're going to use. It'll have to go with the application to they're applying to vote absentee. So if I receive both, then I send them an absentee ballot. If I don't receive the voter ID, then there's a process to go through in which the ballot can be issued with the understanding that that voter ID has to come back with the ballot.
And Jenny, do you want to just kind of go over those as well? I'm sorry.
Certainly. So like Marilyn said, if you're voting absentee and you're indefinitely confined, but another one would be if you have a confidential voter, they do not need to show their photo ID. Most times the confidential voters are going to be voting absentee anyways. And then if you're a military voter, if you're active military, you do not need to show photo ID. However, if you're going to come to the polls on election day and your military permit overseas, then you are required to show your photo ID. But if we're mailing you your ballot, you're not required to first show us the photo ID or send us a copy.
So February 16th will be the first election with the law back in place. What do you think that's going to do, what do you think that's going to mean for the polling experience for people who are going to turn out to vote in February?
I'll make a comment, and for League of Women Voters, we try very hard to take opportunities to educate people so that they know ahead of time what they might need to bring to show proof of who they are, what they might have to bring to show proof of where they reside if they need to register, and even now that some districts have changed in the city of La Crosse, where they go to vote. I was just commenting earlier that my polling place had changed, and if I hadn't been thinking about it or it hadn't been brought to my attention, I would have gone to the place I've gone for 35 years, and I would have been wrong. So we try to educate people so that they know what the requirements are, where to vote, because the objective, and I think that would be true of the other people here today as well. We want everybody who's eligible to vote to vote. And the primaries in February and the general election in April are generally low turnout elections, and we really hope to boost that and have more people voting that in the spring as well as for the presidential race in the fall.
And Marilyn, are you expecting any changes this year for the voting experience?
I think, you know, we had the voter ID a few years back. It was on, it was on, it was off, then it was on. It was confusion to begin with. I think a lot of people know that it's in the air, so I don't think it'll be a huge surprise. You know, we have four elections this year. So the first election in February, probably light turnout, as Ellen was saying. That'll help us get in the groove. The April one would be a little bit more, but then by November, I think the word will certainly be out. We have to train our election inspectors. We have to get them back up to speed of what it means, what they're supposed to look for, what they don't have to have. So it's going to be a process we're just going to have to slowly work back into.
Mm-hmm. And Jenny, are you guys also doing additional training or other things to prepare?
Yeah, and like Marilyn said, the photo ID has been on and off again for several years. So this isn't like the first time we're going to be doing training. I know in August of 2014, I was in the middle of a training with the Village of Rockland when a court order came down that the photo ID was being halted. So this isn't new to the poll workers. They've had training on it before because we've always prepared as if it was going to be in place, and then if it wasn't, you know, we just pull back. So, yeah, we intend to get all the poll workers involved in some type of training, and again, we'll go over what's acceptable, what's not, what is necessary on the photo ID, and all the provisions that the photo ID law entails to make sure that we're ready because we want the election experience at the polls to be as smooth as possible.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little bit about that, because I'm sure that's been very frustrating for, you know, all of you guys who are involved in the voting process, just the back and forth that this has been over the past couple of years. I mean, what's that experience been like? What are the frustrations?
I can share just a little bit from the non-official person, but for Legal Women Voters, who's always been concerned about access to voting and was not in favor and remains not in favor of a photo ID system, and actually was one of the organizations that was part of one of the lawsuits. So as everything happened, you know, you'd read an opinion out of Milwaukee Federal District Court, Judge Adelman, and you'd say, yes, you know, very good fact-finding. There wasn't going to be any voter ID. That should solve the question. Goes up on appeal. The Seventh Circuit says, whoops. Mm-hmm. No, you know, we're going to reverse it. And then the Supreme Court doesn't take the case. So as those things travel through time, you know, you kind of think, oh, boy, we won't have it, and then we're going to have it. And but we're back. We have it. And my understanding is that the only thing out there that might still happen is if they expand a little bit the list of what you can have to show your ID, what document, that's the only piece that's still viable at this point from any kind of lawsuit kind of thing, and that isn't likely to make any kind of significant change. And so we have voter ID, we have to deal with it, we have to prepare for it, have to do it the right way, and that's where we are.
Mm-hmm. I think that can be the same for the clerks. I mean, it's on and off, and the clerks have to learn what is present and then train on it and make sure our election inspectors are doing the right thing. I think the on and off thing has certainly been trial. There seems to be so many election laws right now, and from a clerk standpoint, let's just hold off on passing any more laws and let's get straight what is in effect. I think that's from my standpoint and from a lot of clerks. The clerks are versatile. You know, if we say we need to do it, we will do it. We'll train. We'll get our election inspectors to do the right thing. And hopefully we will do the right thing. We have to be flexible. We have to be able to do that. But we also know that there are laws and we have to follow the law. And we will. We will follow the law. I just, from a standpoint of a clerk and how many times they keep changing the law, it is hard to keep up. And it's in addition to all the other jobs and duties that we have as clerks. Elections are not the only thing, but when elections come up, they tend to be the only thing for a good couple of weeks. So it's a little bit of a trial to keep changing things when nothing has been broken. And we don't have election fraud in the state of Wisconsin. We don't have voters who, you know, are coming in and voting 3-4 times. It's just not the case. So it's a struggle for me to keep adjusting and keep doing all these things when there doesn't seem to be a need.
And there are other things that have changed in the process besides the photo ID requirement. I mean, absentee, over the last several cycles, absentee ballots requirements and time periods have changed. The time that a clerk can be available for voting or registering voters has changed. Now it's what I think Ginny told me is that
Monday through Friday, 8 to 7.
8 to 7. And before that, many town clerks, you know, in a more rural setting, they didn't have an office as such, and they were flexible in terms of meeting people and, you know, helping them have access so that they could vote, which is, in my opinion, what it's all about in the end. And so that rule has changed. And, you know, it is kind of, as I've seen it, as Marilyn said, kind of a constant kind of picking at pieces to make it, in my opinion, less accessible to people.
Mm-hmm. Jenny.
That's my opinion. It may not be everybody's.
And Jenny, you know, what is your take on the whole experience?
You know, in the beginning, it was very frustrating. It was very costly because when photo ID was in place, you got all new forms, all new absentee envelopes, you know, all the documentation talking about photo ID, and then it was halted. You know, so then we had to go and get all the forms that didn't talk about photo ID to get through the elections. And I got to the point where it just almost became a joke. You know, when it was halted or the order came down to stop it, you know, all we could do was laugh about it because, you know, like Marilyn said, we're going to do what the law is. And unfortunately, if that law changes the day before the election, well, we're going to do what we have to get it done. So, you know, it was frustrating in the beginning, and then it just kind of almost came to when the laws or these changes came, we kind of laughed about them because what else could you really do?
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about changes to the voting process in Wisconsin, what voters and officials can expect at the polls this year now that the state's voter ID law will be applied. We're here with Marilyn Pedretti, town clerk for the town of Holland, Ellen France, acting president of the League of Women Voters in La Crosse, and Ginny Dankmeyer, La Crosse County Clerk. And Marilyn, you know, you obviously come represent a smaller town in Wisconsin. Do you think that there are particular challenges for small towns when it comes to you know, keeping up with the training that's been going on and the back and forthness?
You bet. I mean, the town I live in has grown since I started 14 years ago. When I started, I had hours 2 mornings a week. That was it. The town is growing such that now I do have more regular hours and I can be available. But I know a couple of towns in this county, several towns, they don't have regular hours. And some of these rules are so stringent that it makes it very difficult for them to do their job. And the training. You know, a lot of the smaller towns, they have full-time jobs. The clerking is on the side, so to speak. So they've got to fit all this in, learning the new process, learning the new laws, et cetera, and then being able to train their election workers. So It can be, you know, some of the bigger cities, they can hire out. They can hire somebody to do just absentee ballots. I can't. So my job is more than, like I said, more than elections, but during the 2-week absentee period, during a busy election, that's all I do during my hours, are absentee ballots. So then I have to work extra hours to do the other part of my job. And, you know, it's part of the job, and I don't mind doing it. It's just when they add all the rules and you have to go to more training and you have to do more training with your election inspectors, and it's not just a simple setup for an election like you always do. It seems like every election now, there's something new we have to learn or some new law that we have to somehow fit in and do it the right way. I don't think there's a clerk in this county that isn't willing to do the right way, but are they frustrated at times? You bet.
Mm-hmm. And Jenny, have you you know, experienced some of that frustration on the county level as well?
Yeah, and to piggyback on Marilyn's saying, you know, we're losing poll workers just because these poll workers don't want to have to keep dealing with this. You know, it used to be the elections, we could do a training, we'd do a refresher, and the laws didn't change that often. Now that they're changing all the time, you know, poll workers don't want to deal with that anymore. They don't want the backlash from people coming in and upset about these laws when, you know, we didn't make them, we didn't vote on them, we're just here to enforce them. So it is frustrating when we get that backlash from the public calling and complaining about them, but yet, you know, we're just here to enforce the laws and try to make sure we have fair and, you know, justified elections.
Definitely. So, you know, have people already been maybe calling and asking questions about, you know, in advance of some of this year's elections regarding the voter ID law?
we probably get calls at least once a day, someone calling about, you know, what's acceptable. A lot of the calls are someone trying to get that voter ID card that just doesn't exist. You know, there's good websites out there. The GAB has the bringit.wi.gov website that has a lot of information on the photo ID. And, you know, we direct them there. We have a lot of information on the La Crosse County election website, too. So, you know, we're always trying to educate the people. You know, if they call, we want to make sure they have what they need. It's like, do you have a Wisconsin driver's license? Yes. Well, then you're ready to go vote. That is your voter ID card.
Mm-hmm. And, Marilyn, you said that, you know, you feel like people are kind of aware that there are changes. You know, it's just been in the news so much.
Yeah, I think they're aware. Are they aware which way it is right now? Probably not. When they show up to the polls, most of them will be ready. I would say 95% of the people will have their ID. Are they going to be happy about it? Some not. I mean, the first time we had the voter ID, there were some who were trying to do it in protest, and they didn't want to show their ID. And it's like, well, they don't get a ballot. We have to follow the law, no matter if it is a small town and everybody knows everybody. So there's a little bit of that backlash. You know, when we do the election inspector training, we just work with the election inspector saying, we didn't make the laws, but we have to enforce them. You know, just smile and nod and move on. You know, people want to get in arguments and political debates when they come in and register. That is not our job. Our job is to follow the laws, and we will. So, you know, there's a little bit of it. And some of it's in jest. You know, I've had some people telling me different stories that they're going to do on election day, and it's in jest. You know, they're going to do what they're going to do. Is it the end of the world? No. Is it frustrating? Yes. Yes.
Do you think that, you know, now that people have to go through the process of showing an ID and we'll have officials checking them, do you think that's going to slow down things at the polls any?
I don't know that it will slow it down. I mean, the hardest part is if people aren't aware of it, is pulling it out of their purse or out of their pocket and bring it out. We have a process. I mean, I think we have a pretty good process where we set it up where one person is looking at the ID while the other person is, you know, getting the signature on the voter registration, the poll books. The words aren't coming to me. So, you know, there's a system you can get to kind of move it along a little bit. It slows it down a bit. Is that going to be an issue the first three elections this year? No. Hopefully people will be well-trained by the November 1. The November 1 will be busy, and we all know that. The more people are aware of it, the better the process can go, then, obviously. But if they're still trying to pull it out of their purse or their pocket, it does slow it down a bit.
Mm-hmm. And Ellen, you know, the League of Women Voters, you guys held a public forum kind of on voter registration and voter ID this week, correct?
We had Jenny speak to us over the noon hour on voter registration and other voting issues. So that was periodically, not every month, but many months, we do a lunch and learn kind of session and have a speaker of interest to our membership, and it was about this very topic earlier today. We also, and we're not certainly not the only organization that has people go through a training. Terry Lurkey provides a training in this area for special registration deputies. So we already have people trained and already going to venues that we can already to make sure people are aware and help people register if they need to be registered, make sure they know what they need. High school students who are able to vote because they're 18. We've had somebody go to a couple of the high schools already. And we'll partner with students at our three campuses for registration and the ID issue, because as we've learned, only WTC is likely to have a student ID that is compatible. So if somebody doesn't have a driver's license at WTC, if they have a student ID, I mean, it is likely that that will be okay for voting, but the students at UWL and Viterbo have an extra step to take to get something in addition to their student ID. So it's all a little bit complicated, but people know it can be dealt with, and that's what we try to do so that we can have as many people out there voting as possible.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think are some of the, you know, in some of those training sessions, what are the biggest questions that you experience or hear?
I don't do the training, so I can't tell you that, but I can share, and Ginny can join me perhaps, the kind of questions we had today. So people are concerned about whether certain types of documents will qualify for either proof of residence or an ID. People are concerned about the elderly and in the settings they're in, about whether how they vote if they didn't have a birth certificate, for example, to get a voter ID, photo ID, use the right terminology here, out at DMV. Those kinds of questions come up quite frequently. Jenny, you can add maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, what do I do if I don't have a birth certificate? You know, what if my driver's license is expired? You know, and there's provisions of if your driver's license expired after the last general election, which was November 4th, 2014, you know, your driver's license is still good for voting purposes up until this November. A lot of the questions are, like Ellen said, about the elderly. You know, my mom doesn't have an ID anymore, or my mom doesn't have a driver's license. How is she going to vote? You know, them are a lot of the questions that we're dealing with, you know, to make sure that, you know, those people can vote. The general public, we all have driver's license or we have ID cards. That's not the problem. The problem is the special populations and making sure they have what they need, or how get them what they need to go get the necessary photo ID so they can vote on election day as well.
And are there, you know, have there been any, like, informational events or you know, campaigns or ways to get that information out to people? Has that been a concern, do you think, in this region?
Well, I know we created a voter ID brochure on bright yellow paper, and then the League of Women Voters has it. They've been reproducing it, handing it out. All the municipal clerks have copies of it. You know, I can walk into certain places and see the voter ID brochure there. So, you know, we've been trying to get that out there. It's well documented on the county's website. You know, the GAB website has it, the bringit.wi.gov website. You know, they're starting to see commercials on TV about it, and I think as the elections draw near, especially the presidential election, you're going to be seeing a lot more commercials or radio ads about, you know, do you have what you need to go vote?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and typically during election years, we see a larger voter turnout. Do you think that'll, you know, make it a challenge for this year, that this is the first year that we're having, you know, this kind of reapply?
I don't think it's going to affect the turnout. There'll probably be a handful of people who aren't going to vote just under protest because I don't want to have to show it. But I think for the most part, you know, like I said, the general public has a Wisconsin driver's license or ID card. They're ready to go vote. It's not going to be a problem. There'll be a handful of special population or absentee voters that we'll have to work with, make sure they have what they need. But, you know, I don't think overall that it's going to really affect the turnout for the elections this year.
Mm-hmm. And the League of Women Voters, you know, you guys really focus on encouraging people to participate and get out and vote. You know, do you think the voter ID law has kind of changed the way that you encourage people to do that, or kind of changed your guys' focus at all?
I don't think it's changed the basic goal at all, but I think it has changed how we have to think ahead and get on the stick, so to speak, earlier and be more proactive. So we take opportunities to show up. That's kind of a bad expression, but to show up at, after making sure it's okay, show up at different venues, to even just have a table that would have some information about registration and photo ID. An example is the Martin Luther King event that is taking place on Monday evening at Viterbo. We'll have a table and we'll have information available and, you know, larger displays, so people walking by will have an opportunity to pick up something. If there are people that aren't registered, we'll have some SRDs available to even register somebody right there and then if they're thinking ahead and want to be registered for the February primary, so, or any later election, of course. But that's what has changed for us in trying to get out there ahead of the game. So we're not playing catch up and trying to figure out how to get this information passed to as many of those special populations as Jenny mentioned.
That's Ellen France, president of the League of Women Voters in La Crosse, here with us today to talk about how Wisconsin's voter ID law will affect the voting process this year. Also joining us in studio is Marilyn Pedretti, town clerk for the town of Holland, and Jenny Dankmeyer, La Crosse County Clerk. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin.
And, you know, this was, Marilyn, I think you're the one who brought it up earlier, that actually voter fraud was, you know, was one of those concerns that was kind of part of why we started looking at voter ID laws. And so, you know, even before the new ID requirements, you know, how common do you think voter fraud was in our state?
I used to have the statistic, it was 0.000, I think there were three zeros and then a one.
Yeah.
It was a very minuscule amount, and most of them were felons. And guess what? Convicted felons have ID. So you're not going to stop that. That is a whole different argument. You know, you hear the story of there was a whole busload that came up from Chicago and voted in Racine, and they had Chicago shirts on and everything, and they just picked a name out of a hat and voted. Not possible. It's just, it's not possible. You know, if it's one of those things that you hear somebody cry, you know, there's some kind of an issue and it's blown out of proportion. I don't think in the state of Wisconsin there has been an issue in our county since I have been a clerk. Every once in a while there's somebody who thinks they're going to throw a quick one and vote here and maybe vote in the state of somewhere else, like they're a student. But we make it very clear that's a felony to vote twice. A voter ID is not going to stop that either. You have an ID, you can still vote two places. That doesn't make the difference. So I think our election laws are solid. And I think our clerks and our election inspectors follow the rules. When you follow the rules and conduct a clean election, there shouldn't be an issue. You know, the way our rules are set up, you know, you shouldn't lose. Well, how many ballots did I lose over in Minnesota? That was just poorly done as a clerk. You can't fix stupid. You can't fix when clerks do something dumb. But if you follow the law and do what you're supposed to do, there shouldn't be voter fraud. Clear and simple.
Mm-hmm. In the cases of voter fraud, you know, those people have been caught. You know, when you have, we had an incident one time where someone thought, well, I can go in one place and vote and then go to another one and vote. Well, guess what? After the election, you got caught, and now you're charged with a felony. You know, there are some cases in the state of Wisconsin where people were caught, but they were felons. They didn't realize their rights were revoked. Or it's someone who has two properties, and they thought they would skip the system or get smart and vote here and then absentee in another spot. Well, you know, they got caught as well. So there's provisions in place, and I think there's a lot of provisions with the statewide voter registration system that people don't even realize behind the scenes on how you actually get caught. You just think you vote on election day, and the election's over. And there's so many more processes that happen after election day, and that's when the people are getting caught, the very few that are trying to get away with it.
And I think that's an important point. Even of the situations that Marilyn and Ginny mentioned, it's a minuscule number, and not people who were pretending to be somebody else so that a voter ID or a photo ID would solve the problem. Nonetheless, we are where we are, and we have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So we carry forward.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jenny, you said there are a lot of other processes afterwards. So it's not necessarily these people getting caught on election day. You know, it's maybe afterwards, you say?
Exactly. You know, so if someone is able to register and vote at one location and then go to another one, you know, it's after the fact that they're going to get caught. There's a statewide voter registration system that says there's only one voter in there. And when we're looking through the votes and it says this person's already voted in the city of La Crosse and they're trying to vote in the village of Bangor, well, that's going to be red flagged. And we're going to look into it and we're going to pull out the registration forms where they signed and attested they haven't voted yet, you know, and that gets turned over to the DA. So, you know, there's so much more that happens after election day that, you know, people just don't realize the election's over, we're done. You know, we have the canvases, we go through the poll books, the poll book says there was 500 voters, do I have 500 names, you know, how many ballots went through the machine. You know, we go through and we audit all that stuff and we're checking it. So, you know, it's after the fact is where we're catching the fraud, the few that there is.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything that you guys do on election day to kind of help prevent against fraud?
You know, the GAB 131 is a form that you have to fill out. They have to sign it, saying they've not voted anywhere else, that they're 18 years old, they're not a convicted felon. Our job is not to go out and police that. You know, it'll get caught. They'll get caught. Our job is to make sure the forms are filled out correctly. So if the form is filled out correctly and they get a ballot and they vote, the process has worked. If they lie, that's on them. So I don't know there's a whole lot that we do at the polling place that can stop fraud other than making sure the forms are correct.
Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, in past years when there have been fraud concerns that groups have been motivated to observe polling places. And I just wondered if you, I don't know who wants to take this on, but wants to kind of explain, you know, people's rights to observe the, you know, a polling place and how that affects you guys as, you know, polling officials.
Yeah, there are laws in place that allow election observers, and there's a section, you know, marked off within 3 feet of the registration table and within 3 feet of the table where you have to pronounce your name and your address, where, you know, observers can stand and observe, and that's really what their job is, to observe. And when they come in to observe, they have to fill out a form saying, I'm here as an observer, what are they representing, and they sign it that they're not going to interrupt the election process, and there's rules they have to follow as well. We've had many observers here in La Crosse County. On election day, I try to get out to the polls just to check with the poll workers, let them know I'm out here supporting them. And if there's observers, I sit there and I talk to them. And we've had nothing but positive comments back from the observers saying, you know, they're doing such a good job, they're following all the rules. You know, we haven't had complaints from the observers here on what's going on. But, you know, it is your right to come and observe the election process.
Mm-hmm. And Marilyn, have you had any observers in the town of Holland?
You know, it's been a few years. I want to say it's been a good 6-7 years. For the most part, good. We had one gentleman who couldn't hear, and he kept asking for the, you know, the names to be repeated, and the election workers had to stop what they were doing to repeat. And you help out to a degree, and then at some point, you know, that's interrupting the election process. But for the most part, the observers I have had, I've been very polite, and we work with them. And like Jenny said, I mean, we get compliments on how well we run the election. So, you know, if I wasn't doing something right or didn't know the rules or laws, I'd be a little bit worried if an observer came in. But to me, bring them on. We're doing the right thing, and let anybody come in and observe.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys anticipating maybe more observers with the new voter ID laws, people coming in to check out the process?
Maybe not so much for the February primary, but I'm suspecting with the April election and having the Justice of the Supreme Court race on there, I suppose there'll be people coming to observe there. It's sometimes people just come to observe just to observe. You know, there's no real legit reason for there. Sometimes if there's a hotly contested race, they're out there checking that stuff too. So, you know, I expect April we'll probably have observers, and then we'll probably have a high amount of observers for the presidential election.
And my experience would be the same in terms of I've known people over the years who have been an observer for whatever organization, and they tend to be, I don't want to say more popular, but be more of them around if it's a highly contested, and I would agree it'd be the Supreme Court race here in Wisconsin, and certainly for the presidential and congressional races in the fall. I suspect there'll be a number at different polling places.
Mm-hmm.
And I find them, when I vote, I find them very, you know, unobtrusive, and it's not a big deal.
Ellen France is acting president of the League of Women Voters here in La Crosse. She's here with us today to talk about Wisconsin's voter ID law, what changes voters and polling officials can expect when it's applied once again in February. Also joining us in studio today is Marilyn Pedretti, town clerk for the town of Holland, and Jenny Dankmeyer, La Crosse County Clerk. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on voting in Wisconsin. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about Wisconsin's voter ID law. It's been 4 years since the law was first applied to an election, and after an unsuccessful appeals process, next month primary marks the first time the law will once again apply to Wisconsin voters. Joining us today to talk about how this newly applied law could change the voting process are Jenny Dankmeyer, La Crosse County Clerk, Marilyn Pedretti, Town Clerk for the Town of Holland, and Ellen France, Acting President of the League of Women Voters in La Crosse. So because, you know, we've talked about how most people already have photo IDs that already can work for a voter ID, you know, such as a driver's license, a passport, or a military ID, I can imagine that in some ways encouraging people to have a voter ID is maybe less of a hassle than actually encouraging people to go register to vote in the first place. So, you know, tell me about getting people to register to vote. Is that still an issue?
What I said earlier about the league's push to, it's not only about having what you might need ahead of time for the ID piece, but also making sure you're registered. And that continues to be something that we try to emphasize and try to get out to as many venues as possible to encourage people to do that ahead of time. Students, because they tend to move during the year, can be a difficult population, so that somebody who registers before the February primary might not be living at the same address when the presidential election comes around. So, you know, there are different populations that tend to move more than others or change locations. So, but if they're thinking ahead, they can get registered, and they can register if they need to register again because their residence changed in the fall. You know, that they have to be aware and thinking about that. They can still register at the polls. Mm-hmm. But that requires waiting in line, and that, you know, which some people see as a little bit of a hassle. And people do tend to do that for presidential elections, I find. That, you know, my voting place had some student rentals in the area, and so you would see the line for people registering that day to vote. And that's fine, that works. But you can also think about ahead of time and get it done, and then you don't wait in line, and you'll be ready to vote. And that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. And the MyVote website, myvote.wi.gov, is an easy way to go check, are you registered? Are you registered at your current address where you're living? You know, register to vote. If you're not, it's a spot to go find out your polling place as well. And it always seems to me, no matter how much of a push there is to get people registered, there's always going to be people who register on election day. You know, the last time we had the gubernatorial in 2014, we thought we had people registered. The MyVote website had so many people registered. I'm like, oh, we should be good. And you still, there's hundreds and hundreds of applications of people registering to vote on election day. So as much as you push it and push it, there's more and more people that still come and register on the election day. So, you know, you try to get as many as you can to make the lines shorter, but there's still going to be people who just want to register on election day.
Mm-hmm. And I know we work at our town to make sure we have a registration table that is going to be accessible and that they can do the paperwork while they're waiting, you know, so we can move the process along. One of the other issues for that student population is they can vote absentee if they're thinking ahead. They can still vote in their hometown if they don't want to change their residency for their voting process. Then they don't have to prove they've been living there 28 days, which is now the requirement. It used to be 10. So it's certainly an option, but to think ahead is one of the keys. Is it that the end of the world to register the day of election? No. We still are in a state where that is allowed, which is absolutely wonderful. And that should encourage more people to register. Because it's not some states, if you're not registered 10 days in advance, you don't get to vote. And that is unfortunate. So we do have that process available. You know, there could be lines at times. If you're thinking ahead and vote at a quieter election, like the February election or the August primary, you don't have to wait in such a long line. But even the lines on a November busy election, I don't think are the end of the world if you've got the patience there. I mean, I say this all the time, there are people in other countries who wait in line a day, 2 days in the hot sun to vote because it's democracy at its best. So to wait a few minutes in line and visit with your neighbor, not the end of the world to me.
Mm-hmm. You guys ever have an experience with people coming to vote and thinking that they're registered and not being registered mm-hmm. to vote?
Yeah, I hear stories from municipal clerks, you know, that happens quite often. A lot of times when the bigger election comes up, you have these outside groups that will be sending forms out saying all you have to do is sign this form and send it back and you're registered to vote, and that's not the case. you know, so they sign it, they send it back, and then they're like, well, I sent this form back. And it's like, well, you know, we don't even know what form you're talking about, because these outside groups just try to, you know, force it through. And we've had so many people tell us that, you know, they got registration cards in the mail for people who are deceased, because these groups get such old, you know, voter lists. So, you know, it happens.
I had several cases where people come in and they're giving my election workers a hard time. I have voted here before. Okay, and I'll take them aside, take them in the office, and we'll get on the statewide voter registration system, pull up their name, and lo and behold, they haven't voted in 5 years. Well, it doesn't count. You have to vote at least once every 4 years. And then they're always chagrined. Oh, yeah, I guess it has been a while. You know, so there's that. There's some of that case. But some people who have moved, you know, they've been here for more than a year and assume they have voted here. I could pull that statewide voter registration system up and say, the last time you voted, you lived at this address. Oh, yeah, that might have been the last election. So it does happen. We can certainly clear that out and get them registered if they've got the proper documentation.
Mm-hmm. I think what Ginny, part of her response was that it's a good idea to go to reputable sites to find out this information, that something that comes through the mail to you from some other organization or group might not be most up-to-date and accurate. So the websites that she's mentioned earlier, and I'm sure she can repeat, are the ones, the official ones that people should be looking at.
Yeah, if you're getting information in the mail, unless it's from the Government Accountability Board, unless it's from your county clerk or your municipal clerk, you know, chances are it's probably not very accurate and it's probably not up to date. So if you're sent these registration forms in the mail, you know, call your municipal clerk or your county clerk. They can send you the most updated one, or we can direct you to the websites where you can check. But, you know, just be careful of the information you're looking at and see who it's coming from, and then you can check, you know, is this really reliable or not, because there'll be a lot of biased information that will be sent out to try to deter voters from going to the polls. We see that every time, you know, a big presidential or gubernatorial election comes up.
Mm-hmm. So the focus is getting people there, but actually not letting them vote.
Yes.
That's interesting. Okay.
And, you know, Ellen, do you see, you know, do you guys hear a lot of that, you know, certain groups maybe spreading misinformation or, you know, slightly true but not accurate information about voting?
Oh, probably. I can only speak personally, and that really isn't usually on my radar. I'm not looking for, and I can't think of any time I receive that kind of misinformation at home. But if I'm one of those people that if they check the voting history, I'm voting every election, so they're not usually going to catch me out. Mm-hmm. Somebody that hasn't voted every cycle or maybe isn't as aware might be more likely to be, take misinformation. So, again, that's just the message to folks out there of voting age. Make sure you find out and think ahead and go to reputable places to find out how you register. If you don't have a driver's license, what you should bring with you, or how you get a photo ID, those kinds of things.
I know the last gubernatorial, there was a mailing that went out to a lot of people, and it was almost demeaning. It's been 3 years since you voted, and it looked like it came from the town clerks or the village clerks, and people were calling me, and they were very angry. That information shouldn't be, you know, available. And it did look bad to them, like I was giving out that information. It is public law or public record. That when they voted, but it's not something a town clerk would do. And that gets frustrating for a clerk. Or when they send it to the wrong clerk, they'll send out a mailing for absentee voting and send it to the wrong clerk or the wrong address. And it just makes our job that much harder. So, you know, if voters get that kind of mailing, to double check, triple check is always a good thing.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about changes to the voting process in Wisconsin, what voters and officials can expect at the polls this year, now that the state's voter ID law will be applied. We're here with Marilyn Pedretti, town clerk for the town of Holland, Ellen France, acting president of the League of Women Voters in La Crosse, and Jenny Dankmeyer, La Crosse County Clerk. And so, you know, we've mentioned, you know, this November will be a presidential race. And I feel like this year's presidential race has been especially well publicized with so many Republican candidates and also a lot of well-known candidates. Are you guys expecting to see a lot more people at the polls this year?
I would love to get more than 75% of the eligible voters show up. Mm-hmm. I think at the height, isn't it been somewhere low 70s?
Yeah.
For the presidential area?
The presidential election is usually the highest turnout, and we're right around that 75%, you know, for a turnout.
Yeah. And actually, at least, I think La Crosse County is higher than many other areas in the state. But it can always go up, and I would love to see that number go up. And frankly, I'd like to see that number go up in all the elections that occur mm-hmm. up until the one in November, because those are very important too.
Mm-hmm. And the idea that your vote counts
more. Yes.
You know, some people, they watch all these ads that are going to be coming out in the next few months that, God forbid. But you start watching all these ads and you start to feel like it's just, you know, not worth it. And there are folks who think, I'm not going to show up for the polls. My vote doesn't count. But it does. I mean, I've had recounts in my township where it was by one vote that somebody would win a seat. So the votes do count. And the hope is that, yes, everybody is aware of it. Let's get them out to the polls.
Mm-hmm. And Jenny, are you guys expecting more voters this year, especially November?
You know, I think we're probably going to stay right around that 75% mark. I just, you know, every time you think there's a big election, when you had the gubernatorial recall, you know, you're going to have this huge turnout, and then you're still stuck at right around that 75%. I would love it for 100% turnout, which is what I shoot for every election, but just realistically, you know, that's not going to happen. And there's people who just aren't going to vote no matter what you do, no matter what you do to help them register to vote. You know, there's people who just aren't going to vote no matter what.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that there, you know, it's just people who are disinterested, or do you think that there are also still barriers that exist for people to get to the polls?
I think a majority of the people who don't vote are probably just because they're not interested in voting and they don't have an opinion one way or the other. They just don't care. You know, there probably is a small percentage of that is people who have barriers that maybe they don't know how to get to the polls on election day. They don't have a ride. You know, they're unaware of the resources that are available to have them get a ride to the polling places or the absentee voting. So, yeah, I think a small percentage is barriers, people who are just unaware of the absentee voting process or, you know, how to get to the polls on election day.
Mm-hmm. I think there are some people who are, I suspect, are turned off by the whole process. It's not that they just don't have an opinion or don't think the vote counts, but the political system has become so polarized over a number of years now that I think that unfortunately may turn off some people. And the ads, we know the ads are going to be bad. We haven't seen them yet, but our guess is, you know, a lot of negative ads. That can discourage some people. It revs other people up, but I think it may also discourage some people. And I hope there are folks out there, if they're listening, that can think about putting that aside and vote what they believe in regardless.
And, you know, what's one piece of advice each of you would give to voters as they prepare to, you know, start voting next month and then also, you know, for the rest of the year? What's the best advice you could give people?
You know, we put the ballots online well ahead of time so you're able to know what ballot you're getting and what contests are on there. So, you know, research the candidates. Don't come to the polls unaware of what's on your ballot and then you're forced to make a decision of these candidates and you don't know the difference between the first, second, or the third one. You know, so be knowledgeable. Do your research and know why you're voting for who you're voting, and you're just not filling in a circle just because you have to fill in that circle on that ballot. Or, you know, I think even worse, not voting at all on that contest, which we see a lot of undervotes because people are like, well, I didn't realize that was on my ballot, or I don't know who the candidates are, so I'm just not going to vote for anyone. So, you know, be knowledgeable. Know, do your research and know your candidates and your contests and why you're voting the way you are.
I would agree with her 100%. There are lots of places in today's world where you can find out information about candidates. It's not just the ads you see on TV or over the radio or the people calling you, the robocalls. There are many places to get information, and it's part of, I think, being a citizen that you try to figure out what issues matter and how different candidates stand on the issues that matter to you, and then you vote accordingly. It's not just showing up. It's also knowing what you're about and what's important to you.
In addition to that, because those are both good points, is to vote. It's not that hard. and it doesn't take that long. You know, we're open. The polls are open 13 hours in a day. There's absentee opportunities as well. To say you can't get out and vote is kind of silly in today's environment. So just to get out and vote, to be informed, to be participating in democracy.
We've been talking with Marilyn Pedretti, town clerk for the town of Holland, Ellen France, acting president of the League of Women Voters in La Crosse, and Jenny Dankmeyer, La Crosse County Clerk, about voting in Wisconsin and what to expect at the polls with Wisconsin's voter ID law. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.